Tonight's horrifying video is we are heading to the state of Oregon, where this guy doesn't have just one, but several violent encounters with some kind of beast. Then we're heading even further northwest to the state of Alaska, where these oil refinery workers encounter something so bizarre it cannot be explained. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now, let's get spooky. In my experience, a woman came up missing near Creswell, Oregon, about a half a mile from my house in 1983. She disappeared from a rock crusher from where her motorcycle was found, the same rock crusher my grandfather hauled rock out of in the 1950s. Her husband was ruled out as the murderer, and that time in 1982, just a year before, when I was 10 years old, something tried to rip my second-story window off the house when I was asleep. This is true as true can be, and not a made-up story. My father was a preacher, and as preachers will do, consider the incidents to be paranormal. Though I see now that it was physical. Also, our dogs, a pit bull and German shepherd, would often come to the door late at night drunk with terror. When we opened the door, they'd run upstairs and hide under my brother's bed and stay there for a couple of days. In 2004, I shot a buck just above the rock crusher on November 3rd at 6 p.m. I packed the buck out in the dark, 6 miles back to my vehicle. When packing the meat out, I heard these very loud, guttural catcalls that silenced the whole woods. The thing making the catcalls knew I was there. In 2015, I went to the Greenway, approximately a half a mile from where the woman came up missing. My brothers and I built forts in the wooded area back in the 1970s. I wanted to see if the forts were still there. The forts were back in the dark, swampy area. As I was walking, I saw a dead wild stew on the trail. I walked another 100 yards and saw another dead stew laying on the trail. 100 yards further, I saw another dead stew right in the middle of the trail. I considered this as a warning not to come any further, so I turned around and I left the area. I know dogs don't lay stews on trails. Also, why would a human catch wild stews and lay them on trails? These things happened as I said. I'd sign a sworn affidavit. Also, our pit bull died in 1984. We buried her in the field below our house. Something dug the dog up and laid it out on the side of the hole, almost like a screw-with-you moment, or as if to say, I'm real. I could dig your dog up and then lay him on his side of the hole. In 1982, when that thing tried to rip the window off the side of my house, I felt as if something paranormal was there. My dog went crazy, chattering its teeth in terror right before the window shattered. We ran down the stairs in terror. My father went outside with a gun and flashlight. I slept on the couch in the living room for a month. I was 10 years old at the time. In 2003, I had a High Cascade buck tag. I hiked back into the Three Sisters Wilderness near Elk Lake. I took a small tent, 2 gallons of water, and 3 days' worth of food. On the first night, I had a heavy bipedal animal come up from the back of my tent at 1 a.m. and just stood there. It wouldn't leave, even after I jacked a 36 shell into my chamber and yelled saying, I have a gun and we'll use it. An hour later, it finally wandered away. But then it came back again around 4:30. Of course, I was petrified the whole time. At dawn, I grabbed my tent, stuffed it into my pack, and got the hell out of there. A week later, I hiked into the Three Sisters Wilderness near the lava house at 2 a.m. I basically jogged back 7 miles with a miner's light. I shot a buck up there and hiked out that evening. The whole time, I had this strange paranormal feeling that something was following me all the way back to my vehicle. This is the same trail where a U of O professor came up missing. These things are true. In 1992, I, my father, brother, and a friend were bow hunting in Bridge Creek Wilderness, just south of Mitchell, Oregon. Our friend was a brand new hunter from Maine. He wasn't used to the backwoods hunting, and as things would go for a new hunter, he became lost and had to spend the night out in the woods alone. He was found walking on a road the next day. When we found him, the first thing he told us was that he had built a fire, and as he sat there and tried to get some sleep, he kept hearing people talking in a strange language just out of eyeshot of the campfire. He said they talked all night, and that at first he was scared, but as the night went on, he got more tired and more tired and finally just fell asleep. In 1999, a coworker of mine, an ex-Vietnam vet, went bow hunting in the same area. This vet was a tough 60-year-old man who would fight anyone, even if they just looked at him the wrong way. During the night, while he was camping near Bridge Creek, something came up to his camper and tried to tip the camper over, with him and his two hunting buddies inside. They were petrified. The thing, as he said, was extremely strong, and he could hear its hands or whatever they were up near the top of the camper, nearly 9 feet off the ground, trying to push the camper over. The next day, they left in fear, but they stopped at the Ochoco Ranger Station and made a verbal report, at which time the ranger informed them that some loggers in the area had seen a Sasquatch just a couple of weeks before. In 1988, my father and I were bow hunting elk up at the Spirit Lake near Oak Ridge, Oregon. As my father was walking back to the vehicle about an hour after sunset, he heard what sounded like ape calls. He said the calls sounded just like an ape that you would hear at a zoo or in some documentary. Picture this, if you will. A vast wilderness area, pitch dark, surrounded by pines and fir trees, 3 miles from the trailhead, and you're all alone, with no flashlight, coming down the trail and no gun, just a compound bow. Let me not forget to talk about some of the strange stick structures I found in the mid-1990s. This was before the internet and the abundant information about Bigfoot currently found online. The structures I found didn't add up. They were in a deep, dark canyon, 2,000 feet below the main road. When I found them, I thought, wow, whatever hunter was down here must have been bored. But why would they spend several hours way down here to build these things? They were basically sticks lined up in rows on logs. There were also branches intertwined together in what looked to be an attempt to build an Indian teepee. At that time, I just shrugged my shoulders and thought maybe some weird hippies were tripping on acid and did what they did. But it did seem strange to do such a thing in a remote canyon, far from the road. I used to work on the North Slope of Alaska in the oil industry. The work we were doing required us to travel far out into the Alaska Petroleum Reserve, which is basically just untamed tundra wilderness for hundreds of miles. The oil companies would build these long icy roads in the winter that would lead to exploration drilling pads. Our job was to go out after they finished the initial drilling and test rock formations for their oil-producing qualities. It was mid-January. The sun hadn't quite come up yet. And when I say that the sun hadn't come up yet, I mean in almost a month and a half. Polar nights are intense. The particular well site we were traveling to was about 60 miles west of Alpine, Alaska, deep in the wilderness. Our job took a week, but we finished and were heading back to camp to finish our hitch and go home. At the beginning and the end of the ice roads are guard shacks that you have to check in and out of for safety. No cell reception, and radios work only up to a distance. If you don't check in or out in a set time, they come looking for you to ensure you're not a popsicle. It was about 4 in the morning. Not that it mattered in a land of endless night. And we were halfway across the ice road. Travel was slow with the speed limit on the roads at only 25 miles per hour. When something appeared on the road in our headlights. It was a man, in jeans, sneakers, and a hoodie jacket, walking down an icy road in wilderness tundra at 4 a.m. It was negative 20 degrees outside. It's not unusual for the local Inuit people to be out this far hunting. Maybe his snowmobile broke down, and he's trying to get back to the guard shack. Seemed plausible. He didn't acknowledge us in our trucks rolling up next to him. He just kept shuffling forward. He didn't seem cold. His clothing, while totally not appropriate for this extreme weather, appeared warm and dry. We also noticed he wasn't Inuit, but Caucasian. I rolled down my window and asked if he needed any help and if he was okay. He still didn't acknowledge us. He just kept shuffling forward. His face was completely blank, devoid of any thought or emotions. The other guys in my truck had suggested that maybe he was in some accident and was in shock. I continued rolling my truck alongside him as he trudged down the road, still trying to get his attention. Even in this extreme cold, I could occasionally get whiffs of a peculiar smell coming off him. He smelled acidic, if that makes sense. There was just a lot about this guy that made the hair on my neck stand up. The guy behind me in the truck's crew cab had enough of all of this. He rolled down his window and reached out to grab the guy. He later said that he was just going to try and shake him out of his stupor. Before my buddy's hand could reach him, though, this walking popsicle spun around and latched onto my buddy's outstretched arm. He glared at my buddy, and then at me with this look of pure rage, not removing his hand from his arm. If emotions had a physical temperature, this guy would have melted the entire tundra that night. My buddy groaned in pain as he tried to get his arm free from Mr. Popsicle. At that moment, this guy started screaming in our faces. There was so much hate and rage and anger in the scream. It was absolutely terrifying. I slammed on the gas and spun out on the ice for a second before the wheels caught and latched us forward. Popsicle dude still holding on to my buddy's arm and was trying to pull him out of the truck. He was running alongside the truck while the other guy in the cab held on to my buddy to keep him inside. After several moments, if could only have been a few seconds at most, my buddy tore free from this guy, and we hauled ass to the guard shack about 30 miles down the road. We checked in with the guards and reported what we had just seen. The guard was looking at us like we were pulling a prank. But policy said that they had to check it out regardless. My buddy's arm was sore, and when he pulled back his sleeve, there was noticeable bruises in the shape of a hand around his arm. We filed a report with the guard, and were told to head back to our camp. None of us really wanted to talk about what happened, and it was a quiet drive the rest of the way. We flew home the next day. The next time we saw the guard at this shack, we asked him if they ever saw Mr. Popsicle on his patrols. He told us that they searched up and down that ice road for a solid 12-hour shift and saw nothing, not even tracks in the snow leading off the road. He told us it was a good prank, and that he would get us back for making him waste a shift driving around. But it wasn't a prank. Who would make up a story like that? And who would willingly bruise their arm for a dumb prank? We never got a satisfying answer as to what happened that evening. I still wonder about that dude, if he even was a dude. The Alaskan tundra is a weird place, and that is just one of my many weird stories from my time up there. I'll work to write down more of my experiences, and I'll share them.